Welcome, everybody, to the Wednesday night social hour here at By Yahweh's Design. It is the 6th of September, year 2023, 8 p.m. here on the eastern seaboard of the United States. And a lot of things going on. I just listened to Greg Mannarino do his report about the terrible situation with our economy. The bankers, of course, making things much worse. They just announced a vice chair to the Federal Reserve, some guy named Jefferson, who's a black guy who loves to spend money. Gee, imagine that. A banker, a minority that doesn't like to spend money. Are you kidding me? Especially taxpayer money. So, again, things just continue to disintegrate in the world, but here in America quite a bit. Lack of morals, lack of direction, lack of discipline from the top down. It just gets worse and worse and worse. So anyway, we didn't really have a topic for tonight, so I'm not going to go over that. If you go to PastorDan.net, you can look at the Daily Mail page, and that's where you'll find the information about what we consider to be important topics of the day. And like I said, Wednesday night is mostly for a family hour, open forum, open mic, and a chance to discuss what's going on and have people kind of get things off their chest or discuss the different topics of the day, whether it be health or current events or whatever. So with that being said, then I'm going to go ahead and open up the chat here, make sure everybody's got their mic open, and again ask that everybody try their best not to talk over anybody else, and we'll use the general rules of Robert's Rules of Order, where when I pick somebody to go ahead and speak, let that person speak with no interruption until he says that he yields, at which time it's open for somebody else to either make a comment or change subjects or whatever. So that being said, again, open forum. Does anybody have anything they would like to talk about or share or question they'd like to ask, etc.? Charles, I see you called in. I think I unmuted you on your phone. You want to try it and see if it's working?
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, now it's working perfectly.
Right. Yeah, there is a lot going on. We certainly live in interesting times.
Yes, we do. I just watched the tracking of the newest hurricane coming up the Atlantic seaboard. It's headed towards the eastern side of Cuba. It's not supposed to make landfall here in the United States. However, it's already a category 3 or 4, expected to reach high-end category 5 out in the Atlantic. That's if the models are correct and if it does not take on a mind of its own or get directed to head towards the shorelines of the country. But it's a massive storm, extremely intense. It could reach even as far as New England, up around Boston, Massachusetts, up in that area when it does come close to landfall. But big storm, something to keep your eye on. The Weatherman Plus had a pretty good report on it, and it's several days away from even the outer bands having much of an effect on anybody that's part of the United States. But here we go again, right? Some kind of a storm. Besides the financial storm, the economy storm, the racial tension storm, which just gets worse and worse and worse. Oh, by the way, I would highly recommend that, especially our family people out there, and we talk so often about men and what men's responsibility is. Today, of all times, you ladies, you need to travel in the company of a male of your family. Now, when I was a boy, that was commonplace. Women typically did not go out through society on their own, even back then, because women could fall prey to any kind of predator that's out there. So as the moral decay of the United States and the criminality increases, it's becoming dangerous for single women to be out in public places. So keep that in mind. Do all that you can to make sure that the ladies are not put in harm's way. If they do have to venture out, then somebody, a male, an adult male of the family, should be in their company. Preferably an adult male that is trained in weaponry and carrying and willing to use it if the circumstances dictate. So, word to the wise, things are dicey at best, and better safe than sorry used to be the old adage when I was a boy. Better safe than sorry. So don't take chances, especially unnecessary ones, and don't put our ladies in jeopardy. Remember the widows and orphans that we are supposed to protect according to Scripture and according to the dictates of chivalry. They are the weakest and most vulnerable people in our society, and we men should do our best to make sure that they're not, again, put in harm's way. So I yield. Anybody have anything else that you'd like to chit-chat about? Ella, you found some stuff out about what can help people with arthritic conditions and joint inflammation. You want to share that?
Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Yeah, that happened today because my son-in-law, well, about 4 years ago, my daughter convinced me to give my car to my son who was up in New Hampshire. So I am without any transportation at all. So that makes it difficult sometimes. So he comes and he gets me groceries. Every time they go shopping, I give him a list. So he came over today with a list that I had given to him a few days ago. And as he was leaving, he was kind of holding his hand on his hip. And I said, "Is something wrong, Al?" And he said, "Well," he says, "bursitis." He says, "It's getting worse and worse." I mean, Al is now, let's see, he's 3 years older than my daughter. My daughter is going to be 60 come this spring. So he's 63. So I guess he's joining the group of the older people, and things are starting to bother him. Nothing had ever been bothering him before. So before he got into his truck, I said, "Have you tried turmeric or whatever however they pronounce it?" And he said, "What?" I said, "You know, the spice, turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C. And he said, "No, I've never heard of that." And I said, "Well, I'll find out some information for you. But from what I've heard, it's a good natural cure for the pain, or natural help for the pain of bursitis." So he left. And then, of course, I got on my computer and I looked up all the aspects of it. And sure enough, it was good stuff, but you can't just take the turmeric out of a jar and put it in water and drink some of it, because that's not going to do a thing. It has to be turmeric with curcumin, a 95% of curcumin in it, and black pepper. That will help it to be absorbed by the human body. So I gathered all the information that I could, the benefits, you know, how to take it. People who are on blood thinners like warfarin, or another word is Coumadin, if they're on blood thinners or things like that, should check with their doctors before taking it, because it has a tendency to thin the blood out. Let's see, what else was there? Mainly it was to always start with a lower dose. I think the lower dose was 600 milligrams. And I looked up the dosages and the benefits and everything. And I put them all into a little email, and I sent it to Al. And about an hour later, he emailed me back. He said, "Thanks a lot. I appreciate it." And so I just wanted you to know, I sent you the copy of it so that you could tell people that anybody who was suffering some kind of pain as they get older, bursitis, arthritis, things like that, that turmeric can be a good help. As I said, you start the dosage off the lowest dosage you can handle. But don't expect it to work overnight. You can't take a dose and then wake up the next day and say, well, that didn't do anything for me. Because you have to build up a level of it inside you. So you have to maintain use of it every day for about maybe 2 weeks and see what you notice. If you have no side effects, try going up a little bit higher in dosage. Try taking two of them a day until you reach. You can go as high as you want to get the relief you need in it. But it's a pretty good substance. And I've heard it from my good friend Karen in North Carolina, too, that when I was having arthritis pain and I was having difficulty crocheting, that was about maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and she said, you know, try the turmeric. So it worked for me for a bit, but it doesn't work for everybody. So I went off of it, and I have found other ways of stopping my arthritis pain. But the main sources are the stopping the pain is if you're overweight, lose weight. Heavy-duty weight on you is going to affect every organ in your body and every bone and joint in your body. Every 10 pounds that you're carrying around when you get older, it's like you carrying around a box that's 10 pounds. Can you imagine if you're 50 pounds overweight and you have to every day carry around 50 pounds on you wherever you walk? No wonder your knee joints go bluey. There's so many people that used to come in the hospital with knee joint surgery. And, you know, once you have that, you're really never the same. And it's the same thing with hip joints. So I've learned a lot in the, you know, coming into identity when I first met Dan almost 6 years ago. Everything in my life has changed. Learning about the way to treat your body. And because your body is carrying you. It's your home on this earth. And if you let your home, you know, get big and bulgy and rot with termites and all that kind of stuff, you can't expect it to behave for you. So keeping your temple in good order is one of the things that we are commanded to do. So I think every one of us, particularly me, found out that if you eat natural foods, cut out the pork, keep your weight down, and try to keep everything natural. Stay away from the garbage that the government puts in their foods. Stay away from anything that has low salt, low fat, low this, low that, because there's always something that they substitute and put into food to take the place of what they take out, and usually it's not something good. Okay, I'll yield, Dan.
Yeah, good information as always. I used to take turmeric regularly every day. Back then, it helped me quite a bit. But one of the other things people can do is, besides losing the weight, which is critical, obviously, also drinking enough pure water every day, half your body weight in ounces. So a 200-pound man should drink 100 ounces of clear water a day. That's less than a gallon, but still a fair amount compared to most people who drink almost no pure water on a daily basis. So again, help the body cleanse all the irritants and the oxidants out of your body. The other thing to do is to alkalize your body, because arthritic conditions are exacerbated by acidity. So if you eat the alkaline vegetables and fruits to offset all the proteins and starches and other items in your diet that create high acidity, that would be very, very good too. So there are things you can do. And if you do them, like Ella was talking about, you'd be surprised how much of an improvement can be made to your health, how much happier you would be, how much longer you're going to live, and you're going to live a healthy length of time, not go into your senior citizen years laying in a bed with tubes in you or in a wheelchair or assisted living. That's not the answer. The answer is to be healthy, as many of our biblical ancestors were, living well past 100 years old in perfectly good health. There's no reason we can't do the same thing. Go ahead, Ella.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to lower my hand.
So sure.
won't be there. Okay, one thing I want to say, when you were saying drink plenty of water and everything like that, I know when I was talking with Al today, I told him, you know, to tell my daughter that things like a sister seal run in families. Now, most people don't know what sister seal is, but it's a very common thing that comes into the hospital, particularly if people middle age or older. Very few young people have it. And a lot of it is with women, but with men, it's not so often because men think it has to do with their prostate. What it has to do is the development of frequency of urination. I'll use the word pee. If you have to pee, you know, many times a day, and just when you finish, you can only dribble a few drops, and then you walk away and you feel like you have to go again, you could very have a thing called the sister seal, which is when you get older, everything gets lower, it flops down lower, it gets saggier. This is just a thing that happens with old age. And it's, you know, and one thing overweight can do to you is make this worse. I've seen a lot of patients come into the hospital with this operation. Women have it. Immediately, if they have trouble with urination, it's not a urinary bladder infection that's called cystitis. They recommend a urologist or a urogynecologist, which is a doctor of women that takes care of urinary problems as well as female problems. And they'll immediately say, well, you have to have the repair of a sister seal. And 9 out of 10 women who have gone in to have this operation have said that's the worst thing that they ever did. Because it doesn't repair anything. It's a temporary hold. And if you don't change the things that cause the sister seal, repairing it is not going to make it any better. And you're going to develop more problems with the sister seal because of the work they have to do around that area, which can very well affect your sex life as well. So one thing I talked to Al about was this thing with my daughter, and I told him to tell her that having more weight on your body than you need is going to make this worse as you get older. And another thing, when some things like this started to happen to me, I looked up on the internet, because I don't go to doctors anymore, and I looked up what the home cures were, and most all of them would say drink plenty of water to flush the toxins out of your body, and drink as much as you can to flush everything through. Well, I did that, and I can't tell you how miserable I felt. The more I drank, the worse it got. So I found out through trial and error for the past 2 months now that I did find one article that said that if you have this kind of a condition and you're already having to urinate a lot, you have the feeling and your bladder is weak, if you drink more water, you're compounding the irritation of the situation. You're filling your bladder with more water, and it can't hold that much, and it gets worse and worse, and you have a feeling like you're going to burst sometimes. So what you have to do when you start losing weight to get rid of the pressure on your bladder is to decrease the amount of water you drink. The recommendations they gave to me were no more than a half a gallon a day. That's about 60 ounces of water a day. So I did that, and, you know, I found a wonderful thing happened where I seemed to be thirsty all the time. By cutting down the amount of water I drank, I became less thirsty. It was like a miracle. Now I can drink that half gallon of water a day along with my foods and things like that. And the situation, I think, is like 95% better now, and I've only been working on it for about 3 weeks. Excuse me. So in recommendations of that is when you say drink, you can drink too much. When you drink the pure water, when you're younger, your bodies can just, you know, pour it off of it like water off a duck's back. But when you get older and your systems can't manage the excess amount of fluids, you have to be careful what you're doing there. So use common sense that if you have a weak muscle to begin with, what you don't do is you start pouring stuff into it to make it work harder, because you're only going to irritate it and make the situation worse. Okay, I'll yield if anyone has any questions.
No, I would concur with everything you said. In the natural health classes that I took decades ago, they used to teach us in the nature's way of doing things, less is more. So, in fact, especially with homeopathics, many times you got a much greater effect on the body with a minimal dose versus triple and quadruple the dose. And that's because we have this mindset, many people do, that, well, if a little bit's good for me, a lot of it would be really good for me. That's not necessarily true. The body only needs a certain amount. If you go beyond that amount, you can actually do harm and take away from the benefits. So, again, Yahweh's way is to, like he says in Scripture, all things in moderation. So trace elements, let's say, like magnesium, selenium, and all those are called trace minerals. Those are the trace minerals the body needs, and they're called trace minerals because you need only a very small amount. Okay, a very small amount. They are critical to have that small amount, but again, the body only needs a tiny amount, and it can get everything done that it needs to do. If you go over that amount, you can go in possibly into toxicity or create some other kind of problem. So, again, all things in balance, all things in homeostasis. And you know when you're doing it right, because as Ella said, if you're doing it right, your body will let you know you're doing it right. You're not going to have the problems. You won't have the bloatedness. You won't have the gas. You won't have, which is a sign of indigestion, okay? You don't have all that. You don't have the aches and pains. You don't have the lethargic response. You'll have energy, okay? Why? Because when it's in homeostasis, the body repairs itself. The body also operates properly, and you don't have all those problems, and your immune system is fully functional, and you're going to be fine, okay? That is one of the ways you know that you're doing it right. Because everything works. So sometimes it's a case of experimentation and trial and error to find out what you need and how much you need. And if you do muscle testing, that was something else they taught us how to do at the schools. It's a very simple procedure. If you have faith in it and you do it with a clear conscience, I found that it works every single time. Now, a lot of people say, well, it's voodoo. It doesn't really work. It's not based on science. Well, actually it is, because everything in nature is electromagnetic. It has a frequency, a vibration. Everything, every element, every compound, every body has a vibration. And believe it or not, Yahweh created these perfect bodies, these machines that we call our bodies. And that machine is able to pick up the vibrations of the environment around us and the things that you put within the body. And so muscle testing is a way for you to basically talk to your body and find out what it's craving. Long story short, if you're holding an item, let's say it's a capsule of magnesium or it's a turmeric capsule, whatever, the muscle testing will allow the person working with you to tell if your body is saying, yes, I want that item, I need that item, and then you can take it. You can also muscle test for the amount of those, like, do I need one capsule? Do I need two a day? Do I need three a day? And like I said, in all the years that I practiced muscle testing at the school and on family and friends and myself, I never found it to be wrong. And one way we used to test it is have the person put on a blindfold that you're going to see if they're responsive or not. Put on the blindfold and have them hold a capsule that contains bleach or some other compound like that. Have them hold a piece of plastic that's got something very bad, which we often would use like bleach or something similar to that, obviously bad to be put in your body, and have the person hold it and muscle test them, and it would say, the body would say, no, don't put that in my body. And then take another container made of plastic and have it like a piece of fruit, banana, apple, orange, something like that, put that in the capsule, have the person hold it and do the testing, and it would come back positive. So there are ways you can test it and prove it to yourself. I found it to work very, very often. So in this day, when things are falling apart, the naturopathic people and Yahweh gave us a way that we can test our own bodies and tell what we need without all that expensive analytical equipment, which oftentimes makes mistakes. Kumri is here. He can tell you what he went through as a boy and young adult, what the medical mafia did to him. In fact, he had basically a near-death experience at one time. He got a severe infection because the doctor, at that time anyway, he went ahead and got the opinion of a doctor, and a doctor completely misdiagnosed his condition, and he ended up in emergency surgery. Okay, and that, again, I lost both of my parents due to malpractice of a medical doctor. Okay, it's called iatrogenic death, iatrogenic harm. So we actually have a word in our vocabulary that talks about death by malpractice of the medical mafia, and it's called iatrogenic. So it is a real thing. It's happening. Some estimates are 700,000 people a year. Think about that, folks. That's approaching 1 million people per year die due to iatrogenic causes, meaning medical malpractice, the wrong dosage was given to somebody, the wrong drug was given to somebody, a botched surgery, whatever. It's iatrogenic, meaning the medical association or the medical profession caused a person to die. And close to 700,000, according to some estimates. That's a lot of people. I think somebody I read recently put that as the number three cause of death in America. Third highest cause of death in America a few years ago was the medical mafia itself, malpractice within the medical field. So pretty serious. I yield. Anybody got anything else?
I went into the doctor's several years ago, and I told her my symptoms. I can't remember what was wrong with me, but she Googled it.
She Googled it?
Oh, yeah, right in front of me. Yeah, Googled it. Yeah.
Unbelievable. I'm not too surprised. Go ahead, Matt.
$50 it cost me.
$50 for her to look up and Google what you could have done yourself.
Yeah.
Nope, I'm not. Okay, we're getting a lot of echo from somebody. Well, it reminds me of what happened to me clear back in the 1980s when I was in my 30s. I had passed the kidney stone, and so I went to the family doctor. It was a woman, and she said, "You have high uric acid." I said, "Okay, so what the hell does that mean?" And uric acid can cause kidney stones, and it's based on your diet. So she gave me a prescription for some drug, and I took it for 30 days, and naturally my uric acid levels dropped. So when I went back to the doctor after that 30-day period, I said, well, let me ask a question. If this condition is caused by diet, do you have information as to what foods cause a high uric acid condition and what foods I should avoid so that this condition does not happen? And you could see her. She opened up the center drawer to her desk, and she reached in as far as her arm could go. So clear in the back of her center drawer, she had this sheet of paper. She reached in, grabbed it, pulled it out, and here it was, all the foods to eliminate if you want to reduce uric acid. And I sat in the chair and my eyes sort of got big because I looked at that sheet of paper and it was my entire diet at that time. And again, I was a fairly young man. I was an athlete working out at the gym all the time. Every food that I consumed, and large quantities, by the way, at that time, everything I was eating was on that list. So it was no wonder I was having severe irritable bowel type symptoms, a lot of indigestion, a lot of gas, a lot of constipation. I thought all those things were normal. I thought everybody got them. So I went home and she gave me a year's prescription for this same drug, but I did not fill it. Instead, I cleaned up my diet. For the next year, I ate almost all peanut butter and fish, like tuna fish, sardines, and things like that for my proteins. I cut out all the dark fluids, which includes coffee, chocolate, cocoa, all those kind of things. I cut dairy down to almost nothing, no meats at all. For a whole year, I did this. And at the end of that year, I went back and she said, well, all your numbers look great. Your uric acid's right where it should be. Here's another prescription for another year's worth of the drug. I said, don't bother. I didn't fill the first one. And she just got this look on her face like, unbelievable. She said, what do you mean you didn't fill it? I said, I did not fill it. She said, well, what did you do? I said, I stopped eating those foods. And she couldn't believe it. She goes, you actually did that? I said, yeah, I did. So after 1 year, I was clear, and I slowly started working all those things that I just said that I stopped eating. I slowly worked them back into my diet, only this time I followed the biblical admonition that says all things in moderation. So now I had just a little coffee instead of a lot of coffee. I had maybe 6 ounces of meat instead of 14 to 18 ounces of meat at a setting, those kind of things. Cut way back on the starches, cut way back on the dark fluids. I cut out soda pop, all those kind of things. And now, even to this day, I get very few kidney stones. Uric acid's still pretty much where it's supposed to be. But see, again, we're given the tools to fix these machines that we call our body, but the problem is most of our people are either too lazy to do what's right or too ignorant, and they don't care. They just don't want to do it. They would rather take a pill. They would rather go to the hospital and have a hip joint or a knee joint replaced rather than change their diets, rather than being responsible for themselves. They would rather just do whatever they feel like doing and let somebody else be in charge of patching them up and putting them back together. And the medical mafia loves it because they're making trillions probably by now between the pharmaceutical companies and the doctors. They're making trillions of dollars off of our misery. So why would they change? So it's up to us. We have to come out of Babylon. It's just like it says in Revelation, come out of Babylon. Well, the medical mafia is part of Babylon, folks. They're not there for our benefit. It's like these man-made governments. They're not there for our benefit. They are there to enslave us mentally, physically, spiritually, take away our independence, take away our freedoms and our liberties, to make us slaves on the plantation while these oligarchs sit at the top making all the money, and they're all part of the, quote, beast government. And our people haven't figured that one out yet. So, no, the medical mafia is not there for your benefit. It really isn't. Neither is man-made government. Neither is religion, man-made religions. They're all working hand in glove to enslave, to keep you ignorant, to keep you sick, spiritually and physically, and never, never allow you to come out of this syndrome. It's pretty disgusting, really. I yield. Anybody else have anything?
it's quite funny that the fact that you took the logical approach to that had the doctor dumbfounded. It's quite telling, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It she actually, I could see by the face, the expression on her face, that she pretty much thought I was lying. And I had to sit there and actually tell her what I did and convince her. And then she finally said, well, okay. But you could tell it upset her, very much upset her that I did not do what she said and was able to get better myself. And she's not the only medical professional that I've run into that was that way. They think they're gods. They think because they spent all that money and spent all those years in medical schools and all that they somehow have a right to tell us what to do, even if it's wrong. Somehow we're supposed to pay homage to them and just listen to them because they went through the pain and suffering of college and medical school and paid their dues and paid all that money, that somehow we owe them our allegiance to listen to them, even though many times they're wrong. It's a pretty sad thing. Just like the doctors we can't trust, same thing with the pastors, you know. They go through seminary, they get a degree, and they think we're supposed to just turn it all over to them. Don't open your Bible, don't pray to the Father, don't think about anything, just listen to them. They'll tell you what to think. It's unbelievable. So government thinks they're gods, man-made religion thinks they're gods, the medical mafia thinks they're gods, and of course these children of the adversary known as Jews, the fake Jews, the Revelation 2:9, fake people of the Bible, they think they're gods. They literally make public statements. They've written books about it. They've had sermons about it. It's in their Talmud that they are to rule over all of mankind. And people don't even understand that. I don't know. People are pretty ignorant about what's real in the world and what's really going on. And it's amazing. They need to wake the hell up. Okay, I'll yield. Anybody else have anything?
If I might.
Sure.
Charles here, yeah. I think, Dan, the problem with that lady medical professional there is your testimony to her was implying clearly that her whole college education was a pile of garbage, okay, and that better remedies are pursued by just using simple country boy common sense. And in compared with simple country boy common sense, her whole college education is an entire pile of garbage. And, you know, that's for a big professional that's making lots of money, that is so upsetting to come from a common sense country boy that it just really messes with their whole dang universe, you know. So, you know, just my thoughts on the matter are just this is the nature of the world we live in. People in positions of power are laboring under such deceptions, massive deceptions, that when, like a cold, dead fish, they get slapped in the face with some serious reality by honest country people, it just causes them to go into a nervous breakdown. You know, their whole universe starts falling apart. I yield.
Yeah. that does seem to be their response. It's a little bit like the legal. That's another area, the legal mafia. Lawyers, judges, prosecutors, that whole scam, the court system, et cetera, that whole scam, they have the same mindset. Somehow they're privileged. You don't have a right to question them. They'll tell you the way it is. They're above the law. They're above Yahweh. They're above everything. And they're just simply going to do with you as they see fit. And, you know, you just have to take it. Revolution 2.0 is right around the corner. I hope people understand that. We're not very far away from it, okay? And again, it's not anybody's call for violence. That's all bullshit. That's just the Jew tactic to try to shut people up. All you have to do is read the tea leaves, or as the Bible talks about, see the handwriting on the wall. Revolution in this world 2.0 is about ready to basically shit hit the fan. Okay, the vernacular way of saying it. The shit is about to hit the fan. People need to be prepared for that mentally, physically, spiritually. They need to have some cash on hand. They need to have the supplies that are critical for their liveliness, their health, etc. They need to have those in supply enough that they can survive a period of, let's say, how do you want to put that? A period of time when things will not be available, okay? There'll be a shutdown of maybe transportation, whether it's man-made or natural. What difference does it make? Whether they pull the switch and the electrical power is shut off by man, or whether lightnings, tornadoes, hurricanes knock all the power poles down. What difference does it make? You're still going to be in the dark, literally in the dark. Are you prepared for that? Can you go back to living like our ancestors did a couple hundred years ago? Do you even know how to do that? Do you know how to dig a root cellar? Do you know how to grow food? Do you know how to hunt animals and properly dress them for eating? Do you have any clue as to how to do any of that? Many, many, many people do not. So not only do we have literal zombies now because of that new drug, I can't think of the name of it, maybe Ella remembers, but there's a new drug on the market that's worse than fentanyl, believe it or not. And it literally takes people and turns them into walking zombies. I don't know if you've seen some of the videos of people on the streets of like Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, places like that. These people are literally shutting down while they're standing up, turning them basically into the walking dead. So we use that as a metaphor for a while, but it's actually coming to pass. So we not only have the clot shot, which is a fake toxic serum produced by these Jew pharmaceutical companies and promoted by these Jewish people such as Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx, both of them kikes, all right, and the whole kike system that's promoting this garbage. So you not only have that stuff decimating people and killing them, now you've got this drug out there, this addictive drug similar to fentanyl, that is just tearing people up like no tomorrow. It's a bizarro world. We're actually walking through and living in a bizarro world. That makes it even more important for us to stay in touch and network with each other as the community of Yahweh's people on this earth. Much more important that we study and learn and share all that amongst ourselves so that we can be like Noah and his family and come through this storm that's hitting this world. Because that's our destiny, to come through this fire and rebuild his precious world in the image of our Father and according to his rules, and not all of these monsters, these miscreants who are running this, well, let's call it what it is, a shit show. This cacistocracy that they've created, it's an absolute dystopic world. Go ahead, Ella.
Yeah, I was watching some mystery movies lately, or, you know, sitcom. Well, I don't have a television, so I watch DVD movies here and there. And I'm watching this police system we have in this world, right, in America right now. Where do they get the fact that they can take anybody off the street that they want and throw them in jail for no reason at all? It used to be that they had to have probable cause to talk to you. But anybody can walk up to you and say, I'm a policeman, show me your papers. And if you don't show them, we're going to take you and we're going to take you to our office and we're going to interrogate you and sit you in a room without windows or anything else there and not give you water, food, or anything until you tell us what we want to know. And they have permission to lie to you, it's almost like what is it called when they people went to war, terrorization and psyop and
torture.
Torture. They're every one of them who are cops now think that they can come up to you and abuse you. They can go, they can slam you in the shoulder, and if you resist them, they'll say, you're under arrest for resisting. And they, did they realize that putting somebody in an 8x10 cell is a form of torture? People aren't meant to be in that situation. And the laws in this country say that we're supposed to have speedy trial and not be put in jail unless they have evidence. But sometimes people sit in jail for 3, 4, 5, 6 years before they come to trial. Is there anything that we can do about situations like that? I know Charles has been studying law and things, common law and things like that, but it seems like this is getting worse and worse and worse. And we have to start doing something and firing back at them and standing up to them and doing something to get rid of this. What they're doing is actually torturing the people. I'll listen to anybody that has anything to say other than us have to go to law school to learn what we can do and what we can't do. We should be able to say what we want. Policemen should be the way they used to be in the 50s. One policeman walked the street and he was there in case you had a question. He was there to help you in case something went wrong. But the people are totally so disgusting now that the law has totally turned around and even treating the good citizens as if they're criminals. And you walk down the street and you feel like a criminal. If you spit on the sidewalk, you're afraid someone's going to grab you and throw you into a cell. And is there anything we can do about this? I'll yield.
Revolution 2.0.
Amen.
It goes back to that Japanese saying that I talk about on the radio show all the time. How do you handle evil, violent men? Good men who are better trained at violence, just as the knights of the Middle Ages were better trained at violence, and they took out criminals, just as the samurai in Japan. Samurai means servant. Okay, they were just like the knights in Europe during the Middle Ages. The samurai were servants of the people to eliminate evil people. Now, the problem is that when you get a tyrant, sometimes he takes these well-trained men and uses them for his own purposes. Just like in Japan, there were warlords that were evil, and some of the samurai became like mercenaries. And just like the knights of the Middle Ages in Europe, some of them became mercenaries and did very, very bad things. But the whole idea was that when good men decide that they've had enough, they should be better trained at violence than the criminals. And then it's their job to visit violence upon evil people. Even if you read your scriptures, let's be honest about this. What does the scripture say that we are to do with evil people? Does it say we're to kiss their ass and coddle them? Does it say we acquiesce to them? Does it say, oh, would you please stop being violent because I really, really don't like it? I won't do anything to you, but I'm really asking you now, would you please stop, like raping our children and putting people in prison without due cause and keeping them there for 5 years before they even go to trial? Would you please stop? You know, it's really bothering me. Is that how you deal with it? I mean, is that what the Bible teaches? Is that what our ancestors did? Is that what your conscience tells you? No, it's not. It says that good, righteous men, meaning men who hold righteous values, not that men are perfect and righteous. No, they're not. But they hold righteous values. They try to attain righteousness by saying Yahweh's law is righteousness. These men say, I will take up the sword. I will defend the widows and the orphans. I will defend the innocent from the abusers, the criminals that are out there. That's when it changes. The problem with our people today is most of them are cowards, and they don't want to fight. They don't want to take a chance of even being called a bad name. They don't want to be, quote, inconvenienced in any way. They're living the good life. They have all the beer they can drink. They've got all the pizza they can consume. They can take a little pill and get an erection. I mean, this is a good life. My masters have given me all kinds of goodies. Why would I want to rock the boat? That's the slave mentality of our people today. So instead of give me liberty or give me death, it's go ahead and take my liberty. I'll deal with that. You know, make me a slave. I want to go back to Egypt. Yeah, Pharaoh, he wasn't a very good guy, but, you know, we ate pretty good. You know, it was fun to be able to go down to the market right by the Great Pyramid there. I could buy the fish I wanted. I could buy articles of clothing and jewelry and gold. You know, it wasn't so bad. Yeah, Pharaoh, you know, he killed us once in a while and he whipped us. And yeah, but, you know, we had all that really cool stuff. We could go down to the Mall of America and buy watches we don't need. We could buy clothes that we don't need. We could think of ourselves as being really hip people, which is totally ridiculous. But, you know, our slavery isn't all that bad, is it? Why should we fight? Why should we get arms and destroy the wicked? That's the idea that most of our people have today. Instead of the attitude of the Vikings and the Celts and the Vandals and the Goths and the Scythians and all the rest of the tribes of our people that went everywhere with the Old Testament scrolls of Yahweh's law as their law. They would fight and die for liberty, for the protection of their women and children, for the protection of their villages, for their rights as men, free men upon the earth. They were willing to fight and die at the drop of a hat. And people today won't fight because of an inconvenience or being labeled by a name. Instead, they'd rather sit around and bitch about everything when the answer is pick up a sword. And here's the other problem. Not only don't we want to pick up a sword, we don't want to work together. We would rather put knives at each other's back. We'd rather call each other names. We'd rather say, well, they don't read the same Bible. I read the King James, and he reads the World English Bible, so we can't go to the field of battle together. I like the color red, and he likes the color blue, so we obviously can't fight together. That's how silly we are today. Well, he has Sabbath on Saturday, and we have it on Sunday, and that group over there says there is no such thing as a day of the week. How are we going to fight in a war together? And the enemy just sits back laughing his ass off as the white race is disappearing from the earth, and the ones that are left are virtual slaves to the non-whites, and that includes Jews. They are not white. They're the enemy of all mankind, actually. So they all laugh at their synagogue. They have a toast every Sabbath, probably just how stupid the Goyim are. We can get away with raping them, robbing them, stealing their land, stealing their farms, stealing their factories, stealing their intellectual property, stealing their inventions. And they're still just sitting there. Oh, woe is me. The Jews are doing all this. What are we going to do? The local prosecutor is a complete tyrant. Oh, my. What are we going to do? The governor is a Jew who worships Satan and hates the white race. But what are we going to do? That's our people. The answer is actually quite simple and very plain. It's just difficult because it requires action, bravery, and a commitment. Go ahead, Cody. I mean, Matt, go ahead. Or was that Cody?
No, that was me, Pastor Dan. I joined a bit late.
Go ahead, Cody. I'm sorry.
No, you're spot on. Honestly, most people, like you said, they're comfortable in their own skin. You know, they have, you know, beer in the fridge and, you know, food on the table and blah, blah, blah. But, well, it's going to get a lot harder with all this inflation that's going on. It's just going to get worse. Things are going to get more expensive and this and that. And they know what's going on. They see the writing on the wall, but yet they don't do anything. And I ask myself why. I don't know.
They're afraid of.
What are you afraid of? Is, Is it? Are they afraid of death? Are they afraid of standing up? You know, oh my gosh, I might lose this or that or the other thing. That I don't know. It's beyond belief, really.
It's amazing to see it. Matt, go ahead. I didn't hear what you said, Matt.
I said they're afraid of sacrifice.
Right.
Sacrifice, yep. Yep.
Right. And speaking of what Cody just mentioned, I went to the I do most of my shopping at a Sprouts because they have more organics there than most other stores. Guess what I paid for a single mango today? I don't know, maybe most of you don't eat mangoes, but I particularly like mangoes a lot. Guess what a single organic mango goes for today at the market here in South Florida? $3. And anybody that's ever eaten mangoes, they're not really a very big fruit. I mean, they're not much bigger than an apple. And at $3 for a single mango. Unbelievable. You know, I picked up about a 4-pound summer squash. Not a real big one. It was almost $10 for a single squash. Unbelievable. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I mean, if people had ever heard of prices like that, most of our people wouldn't have left the farm. We couldn't get that for a bushel basket full of corn. And yet a single squash and a single mango will get prices like that. I find that amazing. But so Cody and Matt are both right. I mean, they're squeezing us. Really what's going on is the Jew is putting the squeeze on. Okay, this is the final call by the communists who are Jews. Okay? They are making their final push for world domination. I mean, if you can't see that, you're blind. I'm sorry. You're just blind. I don't know what to tell you. So this is their final push, and so now they're squeezing us in every way there is. Energy costs are going sky high. The electrical energy down here is almost twice what it was when I first got here. Almost twice. Gasoline, look at that. It's going to approach $5 a gallon here very quickly. Crude oil, according to Greg Mannarino, crude oil is approaching $100 a barrel. And we all know what that means. When it hits $100 a barrel, you're going to be paying probably at least $5 a gallon. All right, so how's that going to affect your budget? So your groceries are going up. The cost of your energy is going up dramatically. The cost of fuel going up. Cost of land almost out of reach. Why? Because all your rich oligarchs who happen to be Jewish, like Bill Gates and the rest, are buying up your precious farmland. They're buying up your single-family homes. And they're using fictitious money. They're using fiat currency in the form of digital dollars. They're buying up your land. And they're kicking the white man off. Look at this clown that they've got to be the assistant head of the Federal Reserve now, that black guy, Jefferson. All right? Everywhere you turn, it's a non-white being put in charge. The local retail stores, almost all the local retail stores, the managers and assistant managers are almost all non-whites. Medical profession being run by non-whites. Government, here in South Florida, almost all government is non-white anymore. Almost all of it. And they've come in and taken over your country, and the white man still sits there going, well, geez, Dan, what's the problem? I don't understand. I can still drive my car, and I can have a beer and a pizza in the afternoon and put the football game on my telly. What's the problem, Dan? I don't understand what you're upset about. Well,
I think they're afraid, honestly, to stand up and do anything. I mean,
but a lot of them are.
Go ahead.
No, sorry, work away, Cody.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Matt.
A lot of them are too dumb to realize it anyway. I don't know if I was, if last week, if I brought up my like global warming story, but I was speaking to a family member and they were watching the television and they were watching the news and I kind of scoffed because they mentioned global boiling. And I said, it's not getting hotter. And I was told, well, it's not getting hotter here, it's getting hotter in other parts of the world. And I said, that's ridiculous. I said, if it's global, it's global. that means that it's everywhere, but apparently it's not here. I said, they're cutting out all of the meat, so you'll be eating bugs. And the reply I got was, yeah, I'll eat the bugs, you know, to save the planet. So you just kind of wonder, it's like the frog is in the pot and the water is boiling and it's just completely oblivious.
As long as there are locusts and grasshoppers.
Oh my goodness gracious. I gotta tell you guys something. I'm not sure if I'm the oldest member of our community here tonight, but I'm probably one of the oldest members. Ella and I are. If somebody had told me when we were children back in the 50s and 60s that our countries, our white nations would be in the state they're in today, I would have laughed my ass off at them. Anybody alive at that time would have laughed their ass off them. And yet here we are. This is the state of our white nations in the world. It's unbelievable that we've had treason, outright treason, in every one of our countries. And yet the people haven't done a damn thing about it. And yet the scriptures and our laws say that traitors are to be arrested, tried, and when found guilty, executed. That's the law. That's common sense. Because a traitor, by definition, is somebody who's going to put you and your family's lives at risk. Treason is that serious. It is to be dealt with swiftly and permanently. It's no different than a rapist and a murderer and a kidnapper and a pedophile. They are to be dealt with quickly and severely. That is the law of the Almighty. And yet people are sitting on their asses as if there's nothing we can do about it. Well, I'm here to tell you there is something you can do about it. It's kill the bastards. All right? Somebody breaks into my house to rape a member of my family or murder them, we will kill you. That is our God-given right. That is what our Creator gave each and every one of us the right to do. We don't have to take this bullshit. That is a social construct, that is mental programming to tell you to disarm yourself so the communists have an easier way to take over. That's what it's all about. This is all part of the communist takeover, so they are mentally torturing you and propagandizing you to turn you into weaklings and cowards and disarmed so that it's easier for them to rape and pillage and take over your lands. I don't know about everybody else, but I don't think that sounds like a very good plan for me and my family. I yield.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
I'm Jeffrey from Idaho. And I just wanted to say that I remember listening to an interview from a guy. He's dead now, but he's wrote a lot of books, and you probably know him, Pastor Dan, and some other listeners here might know him, but his name was Eustace Mullins.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember him? Yeah.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
In an interview I seen with him, he said that since fluoride was introduced into the United States of America in the drinking water and toothpaste and stuff like that, that we haven't really had a significant revolution of any on any kind of scale to make any difference at all. And he said that the Bolsheviks in Russia, that they, when they took prisoners in their camps or gulags and stuff like that, that this is what they did to the prisoners to keep them compliant, docile, and complacent, was to give them fluoride.
Yes, that's true.
So, yeah. And another thing about that fluoride, I heard a doctor say that it affects your pineal gland significantly. It calcifies it.
Well, it is a byproduct of aluminum, so.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You guys might know.
Go ahead.
You guys might know, I went to the dentist a few months back to get a few fillings, and I use aloe vera toothpaste, and she was urging me to take the fluoride stuff, which I didn't do. But I was telling her that I purify my water, and she was asking, does that get rid of the fluoride? And I was like, I think it does, but I wasn't actually sure. And now that you brought it up, I was wondering, do any of you guys know if you're using a purifying machine, will it remove that?
I can tell
you.
I
have well water, so I don't have that in my water.
The only problem with well water, if the water is seeping from any kind of public sources down through the water table, you're going to end up with estrogen, because there's almost no known way to get estrogen out of the water. That's another one of our problems. Estrogen is a very powerful hormone, and it's screwing up with our genetics and our why women are acting like men and men are acting like women. But the other thing is fluoride. Fluoride typically is not removed with standard filtration. Now, that does not mean that filters can't take it out. It just means that if you buy like a Pure Water or any of these cheaper tabletop like purification things, they do not take fluoride out. If you get a Berkey machine, which has been around for a very, very long time, it feeds by gravity down through these candle, they call them candlestick filters. You have to buy a separate special filter for the fluoride. At least I did. They may have figured out some way to do it with one filter now, but I know a few years back when I had to buy my Berkey filters, in order to get rid of the fluoride, it is a standalone filter that you screwed on the bottom of the candlestick filters if you wanted to remove any fluorides in your system.
I wonder about water distillation, distilled water.
Distilled water is pure water.
Yeah. There's no minerals in it whatsoever.
There's nothing in it, okay?
Yeah.
Then I've told people, if you're on a restricted budget, you can afford to go down to the local hardware store or grocery store and buy distilled water. You can get a tabletop distiller like I have, and they're less than $200. And they'll make a gallon of distilled water in 4 hours. Okay?
Yeah,
I figured out the cost of electricity, well, back a year or so ago, the cost of electricity here anyway, to make a gallon of distilled water was 35 cents. If you go up to the Walmart or some other big store and buy it, it was a buck and a half, I think. Okay,
yeah.
So you can literally make your own at home, and it's only 35 cents a gallon. It's the purest water you can possibly have. But as any naturopath will tell you, you need to have your liquid minerals and add whatever it is, 10 or 15 drops of your essential minerals back in the water. Now, the reason you want to do that is because the minerals in the water is part of where your body gets what it needs. And number two reason is the minerals are what makes water taste better. If your water does not have minerals in it, typically people go, ugh, that tastes terrible. But if you put the minerals back in the water, now it tastes better. Okay? So, when I grew up, spring water in our creeks and everything was fresh water. We could drink from the wells. We could drink from our streams. It was extremely clean water. Today, I'm not so sure. It depends on what area you live in. So if you have any doubts about your water at this point in time, my recommendation is you need to get real distilled water. And then you just add the minerals back in. The minerals to add back in, you could do it with Himalayan salt if you want. If you want to be really cheap about it, get a big old 5-pound bag of Himalayan salt. What I do is I put it in a glass jar, fill the bottom of it with salt, and just add water to it. The salt will dissolve to saturation in the water, and then you just take a couple tablespoons full of that saturated salt water and put it in your drinking water, and you'll have minerals in it. It may not be right. The exact, you know, amount, but it'll be close. So there are very, very cost-effective ways for us to have pure water, but people, it's going to take a little effort. I yield.
Yeah, I was reading a book from a guy named Paul Bragg. It's called The Miracle of Fasting. And he claims that one of the best ways to rid our system of fluoride is fasting. And not only fluoride, rid our system of fluoride, but other toxins. And he claims that when you go on a 2-day fast, a 3-day fast, or even up to a 7 or 10 day fast, you need to do that with water, and it needs to be distilled water. So I thought that was interesting.
From my understanding with the fasting, I've never done it myself, but from a couple of videos I've watched on it, after 48 hours, the old cells in your body are dismissed.
Yeah.
Fasting is extremely important. In fact, if Kumri here, or Jeremiah, he's been doing a lot of research in fasting. He's been doing some fasting here lately. I've known a lot of my friends that have done 3-day fasts. I've done 3-day fasts. Typically, I've done 24-hour fasts often, but what I've settled into right now is what I call the intermittent fasting, which is on a daily basis, I consume all of my calories within an 8-hour period in every day.
Yeah.
Just an 8-hour or less. In fact, I do it in a less. It's usually in 6 hours. I consume nothing with calories outside of that 6-hour period. So my body goes through complete digestion and then a complete elimination cycle every single 24 hours. It's the best I have felt in my life. And the other beautiful thing is my body weight has gone to its ideal position without any dieting. No counting of calories, none of that. Just simply let the body eliminate and digest properly, and it shuts down the desire for the junk food. It shuts down the desire for sugars. It shuts down the desire to overeat. And next thing you know, your body is shrunk down to the size that God intended it to be, instead of what these walking stomachs and everything else we have today. Kumri, go ahead. You got your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to add my own personal experience and what I've studied and researched about fasting. One, fasting is actually probably the healthiest and safest thing anyone can do to fix their bodies. Whatever the problem is, like, I don't care what name the doctor gives, whatever's wrong with you, 9 times out of 10, a fast will do a huge amount of benefit to healing you of that problem. And that's one of the main reasons, is because after, I believe it is 8 hours, and now when I calculate those 8 hours, it's after at least 2 hours after you eat, then start counting 8 hours. So all in all, it'd be like 10 hours. And that's because now you're guaranteed there's no more food in the stomach. It's pretty much all the way through the small intestines. And at this point, I consider when the body starts its true fasting. After, I want to say it's after 8 hours of true fasting, the body starts to hype up autophagy. Autophagy really doesn't get truly started into higher gear until 16 hours fasting, and then it just goes up from that. Now, autophagy is basically just Latin for self-eating, and a lot of people get scared because of that definition, because they think, oh my God, I'm, you know, wasting away, you're eating yourself. No, that's literally almost impossible for the body to do. The body will not eat itself until you've been literally starving. And starvation does not kick in till about 2 to 3 months with no food and all your fat storage is gone and everything else is gone. Then you enter actual starvation. Almost anyone can do a 10-day fast if you're, well, let's put it this way. There's almost no one out there today who will die not eating for 10 days.
Yep, that's right.
Your mind will probably go nuts. Mentally speaking, it will be probably hell for you. But a lot of people can get better by first doing like what Dad does and what I do, which is intermittent fasting. I only eat once a day at 4 p.m. to 5 p.m., and then I don't eat again until the next day at 4 p.m. But I also, every week, I do a fast of 48 hours. I don't eat from 4 p.m. Thursday until 4 p.m. Saturday. So
wow.
I do that weekly. I do that weekly. And I found out when I first started doing that again, I was like, whew, last time I tried to even do a 36-hour fast, it was grueling. This time around I did it was like nothing. It was like walking in the park. I felt like I could probably go a whole another 24 hours if I wanted to, but I decided to cut it at 48.
Yeah.
And so the biggest thing about autophagy is when that starts to really kick in, it destroys cancer. Because whether you believe it's a fungus, whether you believe it's viral, or whether you believe it's a malfunctioning cell, it does not matter. If it's a malfunctioning cell, autophagy is the body's self-diagnostic system. So when you're not eating, the body's going to basically scan itself. It's going to find all those malfunctioning cells. It's then going to recycle them. That means it's going to tear them apart and put them back together as a healthy cell. So if cancer is a malfunctioning cell, there you go. The cure for cancer, stop eating and let the body fix the problem. If it's a fungal problem, an overgrowth of fungus, when you're not eating, again, the body's going to self-scan. It's going to find the fungus. It's then going to send the immune system to where it needs to go, and it's going to fix it. Of course, not overnight, but it's going to do it a hell of a lot quicker and safer than chemo and radiation ever will without damaging any of the other cells. The not so much side effect, but the other benefit to if you have cancer and you're fasting is all your other cells, body systems, and detox organs are getting a major break from having to spend useless energy on digesting and assimilating the what nutrients might be in the food, but mainly on trying to get rid of all the poisons in the food that we're eating. So all that stops. So that's a whole lot of extra resources and extra energy the body can use for healing itself. And the one of the other main benefits to fasting is there's a huge amount of HGH, which is released, which stands for human growth hormone. Now, this is where it totally destroys the idea that you're going to waste away just by not eating. Human growth hormone is released the moment you start to feel hungry and you enter a fasting state. And that hormone literally tells the body to not eat the muscle. It's a hormone that literally tells the body to not eat itself. And if you exercise while fasting, you will build muscle faster because of the increase in human growth hormone. But like with starvation, there is a point in time to where that hormone ain't going to stop the body from trying to keep itself alive, and then you start to eat up the muscle. But I'd say at least, it's been shown. There's many people who went on month-long fasts. You could fast for a month and not damage the body in any way. More so than anything, you got to really mentally prepare yourself to do that and make sure you have enough body fat to do that. And that's the biggest factor when it comes to really long fasts is your mental health. And do you have enough body fat to do a month-long fast.
Hey, Jeremiah.
Excellent.
Yeah, let me add a little something there. Everything he was saying, I concur with, like, almost all of it. However, I would just add, because Ella made a very good point, fasting can put a strain on the body depending on your physical condition when you go into the fast, and that's what Jeremiah is saying. If you're going to do an extended fast, you've got to be in pretty damn good shape mentally and physically to do that. But what I would add is, any kind of fasting that you're going to try to do, don't do it alone. Have a naturopathic doctor, have a nurse, have a friend, have somebody with some kind of training on the signs to look for that you might be in trouble. Okay?
Yep.
That's a word to the wise when you try anything like that, where you're doing an experiment on your own body as to what it can tolerate, whether you're changing your diet, whether you're changing a fasting routine, whether you're changing pretty much anything. You should never do it completely alone. That's why the scripture tells us, in the counsel of many, there is victory. We are a team here. There's all kind of experience. Just here tonight, you've got all the years that Jeremiah has gone through to be board certified in what he's doing. You got Ella, who retired as a nurse, 40 years in intensive care, nursing, etc., cardiothoracic. The years that I spent in training to be a naturopath, and everybody else that's here doing it. So you just here tonight in our little gathering, we've got lots of experience, lots of knowledge from study. And so if you're going to do these kind of things, don't do them alone. That's what I'm trying to say. Make sure somebody knows what you're trying to do and could help identify that you might have a problem so that you don't do harm. That's the main thing. Remember the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. So we should note, we should not harm ourselves either. So in order to do no harm to ourselves, we need to enlist the experience and training and knowledge of our brothers and sisters in Yahweh. I yield.
Very nice.
That's a good point, and I guess I'll second that with, if you are a regular modern American and you're eating three, maybe four meals a day and snacking, I would not urge or suggest or recommend someone like that to try to go even 24 hours without fasting. I would say, let's try to first, can you take out the snacks? Let's try to just do a day of no snacking. If they could do that for maybe 2-3 days, awesome. Now let's try to go from four meals down to just three and do that for a couple of days and then down to two and vice versa. So, which I would assume probably most of the clients I will get from, at least in my country here, America, they're probably going to be the type who I would not suggest to fast right away, mainly to just work down all the food they're consuming and then go into a fast.
Yeah, the main thing is there are no miracle cures. Everybody wants something that'll fix all their problems and do it overnight. That's just not Yahweh's way, okay? When you go to classes to become a naturopath, that's one of the things they're going to tell you. Nature will fix just about anything that you have as a problem. It's just not going to do it overnight. And you are going to have to make some changes, whether it's diet, your routine, your habits, whatever, your mental state. You have to be a participant in this process, too. It's not like walking into some doctor's office and it's all his fault. You tell me, doc, the surgery or the pills that I got. No. You have to be your own physician. So you need to do a little research yourself, and you have to be involved. The rest of us can help, but you, each of us, is responsible for this vessel. That's a scriptural principle, by the way. This is a temple. That's why it says it's a holy temple. Inside this temple is the spirit of Yahweh and the spirit of you coexisting within this temple. That's why it's sacred. That's why he said, don't put pollutants in my temple. You are the temple. So be careful what you do with it. And you can't ask somebody else to fix it for you. You have to just want help to fix yourself. That has to be the mental state of mind if you're going to go into natural health. The beautiful part of it is it works. All of us here tonight can attest to the fact we've witnessed it in our own lives. What Yahweh put upon this earth is our food and our medicine, all in one. Our food is our medicine is our food, just like the book says. Okay? We just have to have the right mindset and the willpower to follow Yahweh's law, and we can fix ourselves. We can make this a better world, and we can make us better people. So, anybody else have anything else?
Come on, guys.
I might just add, it's pretty important when after you go on like a 2-day or a 3-day fast, to when you break that fast, you got to make sure that you're breaking it the right way so that you don't get sick too. You know, fresh vegetables, you know, and stuff like avocados and stuff like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend coming off an extended fast and going down to the Longhorn Steakhouse and having an 18-ounce porterhouse steak with a bunch of veggies and starches and rolls and butter and all that. That probably would not be a very good thing to do coming out of a fast.
No, frying up a bunch of eggs or something like that, or having a big bowl of milk and cereal. You know.
Yeah. You want to ease your body back into the processing and digesting of food. That's basically the rule of thumb. You want to ease your way. It'd be just like somebody, an athlete, okay? Let's say you tore a ligament and you had to have surgery. You wouldn't go back after months of restoration of that ligament and that leg. You wouldn't go right back out onto the track field and expect to run a marathon. That'd be crazy. You got to ease yourself back into it. So, again, there is wisdom and counsel in many, and that should be taken advantage of no matter what any of these natural ways of helping yourself heal that you want to use. There are tons and tons of articles and books and personal testimonies to help people out. I remember we as a congregation in Michigan, this was back in the 1990s, the early 1990s, in that time frame, we as a congregation, we all went on a 3-day fast together. And there were some young people who were somewhat diabetic, and they were very concerned about it, and they came to me and they said, you know, what would you suggest we do? We really want to do this, but we're scared because the doctors have told us we have to have some kind of calorie intake throughout the day. I said, well, put it in Yahweh's hands. I said, if your heart's desire is to do this, why don't you go into it with the idea that, okay, I'll give it a try, but the first sign that I have any kind of illness or I'm getting sick or I'm showing signs of a diabetic reaction, then you go off of it and you make sure you carry your little sugar tablets and sugar water or whatever it is you carry with you. Make sure you have it with you your whole time. Well, we got back together a week or two later at another gathering. So I went up to him and I said, how did your 3-day fast go? Did you do it or what? And they said, yeah, we did. I said, so you made it the whole 3 days? They said, yeah, we did. I said, and you didn't get sick or have an episode? They said, no. I said, wow, I thought for sure you would probably have to give in after 6 to 8 hours. And they said, no, we made it for the whole 3 days, just drinking water. So, again, I'm not saying everybody can do that, but this young couple, they were able to do it, and they were okay even with a 3-day fast. But everybody's different. That's the point I guess I'm trying to make. You have to go into it being very, very self-aware of your own body and what's going on. You can't just turn off all of your sensory perceptions about what's going on in your body. You have to pay attention to the signs, whatever you're doing, and you must seek advice from those around you who know what's going on. We have the ability to fix almost everything. I yield.
Dan?
Yeah.
The one thing that I'll say, I know we're getting near the end to an hour and a half here. I just wanted to say that we should all just use our common sense that God gave us. For one thing, if you come to a body of water and you're on a cliff, you look down, would you jump into that water not knowing what's underneath? So anything that you go into in this life, whether it's changing your diet or anything else too, what you always should do is research it, look it up before you do anything, because then you'll know whether you can tolerate it or not. But if you jump into that body of water and you're halfway down and you realize there may be rocks underneath that surface, it's too late. And your health is something that can snap and go and kill you in a second. So it's very valuable, and time is all we have. So take that time first to research what you're doing or what you intend to do, to find the pros and cons, and to see what you should and shouldn't do. And stay away from doctors. And I just wanted to also, before, this is the last time I'll say anything tonight, but thank you so much, all you guys, every one of you. You're totally wonderful. And I respect all your opinions, and you've given great advice. And I'll tell you, this is a great family to be in. Every one of you, Charles, Jeffrey, Cody, Matt, Jeremiah, John, and especially you, Dan, thank you so much. I just wish there were more women here, because women can give their viewpoint too. But sometimes women don't have the patience when they're younger and they have families to take care of. But I've really enjoyed you guys, and I thank you very much. And Yahweh bless you all totally. Thank you. I'll yield.
Yeah, well said. Well said, Ella. And I concur. Our family's not a big family, but then again, Yahshua traveled with how many people? 12. That's all. 12 men. Yahshua changed the white man's world with just himself and 12 other guys. So it's commitment, or as my father would say when I was a boy, a man with conviction is a majority. Okay, that's the problem with the white race today. Not many people have conviction. They've got opinions, they've got excuses, but not a whole lot of conviction, okay? So a man with a conviction is a majority. And anybody that's ever been amongst a bunch of our enemies and seen somebody stand up to him, as Yahshua would have done with conviction, they're terrified with that. The enemy works by deception. The enemy works by mental programming and deceiving. A person with conviction is difficult to do that to. That's what terrifies them. The white race has lost their convictions, and they're terrified at the idea that a significant portion of the white race ever reattaches itself to its grounded principles in biblical law and has conviction to the point of not going along with the agenda of the communists, even to the point of death. If we reach that point, their game's over. They lose instantly. So that's something to think about, how important it is to be convicted. Convicted by the Holy Spirit, not convicted by these fake man-made courts and their man-made laws, which is a joke, but convicted by the Holy Spirit of our Father above. And Ella's right. It's and I'm starting to go hoarse, and I'm a little tired. I was outside working all day today, so I'm going to go ahead and close the session out with prayer, unless somebody has something urgent that they want to get out yet tonight. Anybody with something urgent here?
I just wanted to add, it is also a pleasure.
Pleasure's ours too, Matt. And Ella was quite right. It's a wonderful family we belong to. So I'm going to go ahead and real quick then, if everybody doesn't mind, and do a bunch of muting here, and then we'll say a short prayer and close out our get together here, which was excellent, by the way. I appreciate everybody that was here tonight. Dear Heavenly Father, Yahweh, we give you the praise, glory, and honor. We thank you for this opportunity to come together as a family and the wonderful information that you have imbued into us as individuals, but then we come together as family and we share that. We become stronger than the sum of the parts. When we do that, we become a much stronger force than the sum of our forces as individuals. And the enemy knows that as well. That's why they spend so much time and so much energy trying to divide us and causing discord amongst the brethren. We thank you for this fellowship. We thank you for the enlightenment that you've imbued many of our listeners with in the areas of common sense about health and about faith, about community building and home building, all the different topics where so many people today are liars and deceivers. Truth tellers. We want to be truth tellers. We want to uphold your law and bring people back to you to be in good graces with you, Father Yahweh. You are the King of all kings. You are our leader and commander. And by your spirit, we'll be led into truth and knowledge, and we will be victorious over this crowd. And they know it. They're starting to get a little bit fearful here because they have not won yet. And so they know their time is short. So we're liable to see almost anything happen over the next couple of years. So we again ask, Father, that you would reach down as your little children, take us by the hand, guide us, help us to be strong, without fear, bold in truth, bold in doing righteous deeds, bold in protecting our own. So walk with us and guide us in all that we do, that we could be your children and ambassadors upon this earth. And always we ask, Father, that you would protect us from our enemies. We ask all this in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.